now move into the next era with Tim Bennett, who's past president of the Ophthalmic Photography Society, talking about the origins of photography and then ophthalmic photography.
Thank you. I have the following financial relationship to disclose. I receive lecture fees from Genentech. Well, while researching the origins of photography, I came across several inconsistencies, rivalries, and controversies, and I'd like to share a few of them here. The origins of photography can be traced back to 1826 when Niepce took the first permanent image that he turned a heliograph. The image on the left is the original plate itself, and the right-hand image is a print that's been enhanced with watercolors. In 1826, Niepce began collaborating with Louis Daguerre to improve the photographic process. Daguerre continued the research after Niepce's death. By 1837, he was able to create this still life image with a 20 to 30 minute exposure. A couple years later, in 1839, Daguerre felt the process was perfected, and it was announced with great fanfare. It resulted in sharp, direct positive, mirror-like images on silvered copper plates. As a positive, multiple copies could not be made, and the images need to be protected by glass or a frame because they were fragile. Daguerre was very handsomely rewarded by the French government when they announced the daguerreotype as their gift to the free world. At the same time, noted British academic William Henry Fox Talbot had been experimenting with what he termed photogenic drawing. Talbot was stunned at Daguerre's announcement, just as he was preparing a paper on his own methods for presentation to the Royal Society, and he claimed that his photographic process actually preceded Daguerre's. This is the earliest known surviving Talbot negative. He photographed this window several times, and this image could be dated as early as 1835. His process was somewhat different than Daguerre's, in creating negatives on sensitized paper that were then contact printed as positives. While Daguerre bathed in the limelight, Fox Talbot received little recognition and remuneration, and the final insult seemed to be that the Royal Society declined to publish his paper. He was very frustrated. In 1841, he patented his calotype process, trying to profit from it, but this prevented widespread acceptance. Over the next decade, he was criticized in print, accused of appropriating others' work. His patents were contested and eventually undermined. Well, different historical accounts assign priority of discovery to one versus the other based on the estimated date of these two images. Interestingly, a lesser-known third photographic pioneer, the Reverend J.B. Reed, is sometimes credited with preceding both Daguerre and Talbot, and there is some evidence that he influenced Talbot's calotype process. Well, history usually crowns a winner, and in this case, even though Talbot made several significant early contributions, Daguerre is generally given credit as the founder of photography. World Photography Day is celebrated on August 19th, the anniversary of Daguerre's announcement. One Talbot bio actually suggests that had he only announced or published a few weeks sooner, history would have credited him instead. About the same time, Charles Wheatstone, a contemporary and friend of Talbot's, presented his work on binocular vision and introduced the mirror stereoscope. Just a couple years later, Wheatstone collaborated with Talbot and another photographer, Henry Collin, to produce what is believed to be the first stereo photograph, a portrait of Charles Babbage. A decade later, Brewster invented the refracting stereoscope, and that led to some rivalry between Wheatstone and Brewster. Both of them were very prominent scientists, inventors, and fellows of the Royal Society. Brewster initially embraced Wheatstone's observations and used the Wheatstone stereoscope to conduct his own experiments. He later wrote, however, an anonymous letter to the Times criticizing Wheatstone and disputing the priority of his invention. They became bitter rivals, and a public feud continued in very combative letters to the Times. The debate raged for years, but they eventually reconciled shortly before Brewster's death. Both of their stereoscopes, however, remain very important in viewing ophthalmic images, the Brewster for 35mm slides and the Wheatstone for digital images. Over the next few decades, there were incremental advances leading to successful fundus photography. When it comes to the first successful human fundus photo, different historical accounts assign priority to different investigators. Howe, Jackman and Webster, and Barr have all been mentioned. Jackman and Webster were the first to publish in two photography periodicals in 1886. Here is the article from the June 1886 Philadelphia Photographer. The article described a 2.5 minute exposure resulting in an image with a prominent corneal reflex, but a very faintly visible optic disc that we can see here. And here. Three other names played a prominent role in early fundus photography. Elmer Barr, Lucien Howe, might have been the first to actually photograph the human retina, according to some historical accounts. I was able to retrieve these two articles with very similar sounding titles, and interestingly, they are both from Buffalo, New York, and released the exact same month and year. Howe's 1887 report to the AOS credited the work as that of his assistant, a Dr. Elmer Starr of Buffalo, New York. In seeing this, I wondered what the likelihood was that there was an Elmer Barr and an Elmer Starr, both of Buffalo, New York, working independently to photograph the living human retina. Could it simply just be a typographical error? In searching further, I was able to find this correction in the AJO, and it really was Elmer Starr, not Barr. And another correction, the following year, in an article in the Scientific American, there was a correction, again, Elmer Starr of Buffalo, New York. Searching the literature for Elmer Starr at this point turned up this paper, which was essentially the same content and technique as both the Howe and Barr papers. Indeed, they all came from the same lab and described the image reproduced here. Howe claimed that their results were the first recognizable fundus photograph, and based on the written accounts from the time, Howe and Starr's image was more recognizable, but it's difficult to tell from these published illustrations. Interestingly, Howe's account was delivered as a third-person report, while both the Barr and Starr papers are written in the first person. And all of this suggests that Starr was the principal investigator and actually took the photographs. I haven't been able to find a historical account that credits Starr as being amongst the first to obtain a recognizable photograph of the living human retina, but he clearly seems to have missed his place in history. By the turn of the century, there were improvements in film and instrumentation, notably by Thorner, who created the first stereo fundus camera, and Dimmer, who designed this unwieldy instrument that produced stunning, reflex-free fundus images. Dimmer's images were clearly superior to Thorner's, and according to several authors, Thorner actually accused Dimmer of retouching the photographs to remove the central corneal reflex. This resulted in another bitter, long-lasting feud. From that point on, there were several milestones in the evolution of both photography and ophthalmic photography, but they seemed decidedly less controversial. In summary, many of the important milestones occurred during the Victorian era's great enthusiasm for science and invention. Several of the principals were competitive, bitter men that craved recognition for their contributions and a place in history. History has certainly smiled on some of these men and been unkind to others. And I'd like to finish with this quote here. Let me go back. The camera exists because men were intrigued by the function of the eye and wished to be able to reproduce on a permanent record that which the eye enabled the brain to record. How appropriate, then, that ophthalmology has turned the camera into a valuable tool for recording the structures of the eye. Thank you.